Tiny Talk, Episode 6. In this episode, interview with law professor Rebecca Tushnet. Hello, and welcome to Tiny Talk, a podcast about mushes and other text-based virtual worlds. I'm your host, Javelin. Rebecca Tushnet is an associate professor of law at Georgetown University Law Center and holds a degree in law from Yale Law School. Before coming to Georgetown, she worked as an intellectual property lawyer, a clerk for Justice Souter of the U.S. Supreme Court, and a professor at New York University School of Law. She's written several important articles on copyright law and fan fiction, and her current research focuses on copyright and free speech. I spoke to Professor Tushnet on the phone from her home. Professor Tushnet, in a published work of fiction, what exactly can be copyrighted beyond the literal text? I mean, to what degree are characters and setting, for example, subject to copyright?
Well, it's pretty well established that characters are subject to copyright, although it's easier to get protection for a character who's been visually depicted. It's early on, actually, in the expansion of copyright. The creators of Superman, or the owners of Superman, sued for infringement when lots of people were trying to take advantage of the boom in superhero comics, and won a couple of cases where people's superheroes came too close to Superman's powers. So the specific attributes of a character, if they're all combined in pretty much exactly the same way, can be protected against reuse elsewhere. And in terms of setting, I think everyone pretty much accepts that you could, in general, protect setting, but there aren't really any cases on it. It just hasn't sparked any particular litigation. But if you set something in Middle Earth, that's probably within the rights of the owner of Tolkien's copyrights.
Now, in your articles, you've argued persuasively that written fan fiction may in fact not infringe copyright because it may meet the requirements of fair use. Could you review for our listeners the factors that courts use to decide whether a work that incorporates copyrighted materials is in fact fair use?
Sure. The Copyright Act sets forth four factors that a court is supposed to consider. The first is the purpose and the character of the use. And that usually covers two things. First, whether the use is for profit or not. And second, whether the use is transformative or for some noble or valuable social purpose. So it could be criticism, commentary, parody, news reporting, analysis, things like that. So that's the first factor, and it's a very important factor. If you succeed in showing, as the defendant, that your use is favored under the first factor, you're probably going to do pretty well in the rest of the test. The second factor is the nature of the copyrighted work. In theory, there is more leeway for fair uses of factual works than fictional ones, and for published works than for unpublished ones. And courts balance that in different ways, depending on the specific circumstances. The third factor is the amount of the work that you use, and the fourth is the effect of the use on the market, on the legitimate market for the copyrighted work. So whether you are going to substitute for supplant sales of the original or authorized licensed works of the original. And that's the other key factor. So if a court finds that your use is going to substitute for authorized works that would make the copyright owner some money, then that will weigh heavily against you.
So I wanted to ask a couple of questions about that first factor. With respect to the nonprofit part of the factor, if someone publishes fan fiction, for example, for free, but then were to solicit or accept donations, non-compulsory donations, is that nonprofit? Is it non-commercial? Or does that fall into the commercial use?
That's a tough question. I've never heard of a situation like that being litigated, so this is just speculation. What I would say is that courts these days are increasingly willing to say there is a gray area between commercial and non-commercial, and that makes sense. And a lot of internet uses fall into this a gray area. Somebody might be making money, but it's pretty indirect, and it's not necessarily tied to any particular use. So if you had a fan website and solicited donations to support it, and one of the things that you had on it was fan fiction, my feeling is that the court ought to find that that is somewhere in the middle. So it doesn't favor the copyright owner as much as if you were selling the stories, but it also doesn't favor the fan as much as if it were just purely out there, free, read it, and go away.
And with respect to the transformative nature of the work, one of the things that I found particularly interesting in several of your articles was the point that there's more protection when the new work is specifically commenting on the copyrighted work, which means it has to be bringing up something, some subtext that's already present and pointing it out. Is that necessary for the new work to be deemed transformative?
It's very, very helpful. I don't want to say it's absolutely necessary, but if you think about the relationship between the first and fourth factors, what sort of thing is the copyright owner likely to authorize next? And if it's, say, a new character who just fits into the existing world and doesn't really shed new critical light on the original, that's just something that the copyright owner is more likely to authorize, and courts are more likely to say, well, that's within the legitimate scope of the copyright owner's rights. So, say, a new Jedi in Star Wars who just has this standard range of powers and the standard range of behaviors, well, you know, George Lucas might want to do that. So why should anyone else get to do it? It's you're not necessarily adding anything that George Lucas wouldn't. You may just be taking money away from him.
I see. So with respect to the kinds of activities that Mush players and Mush designers are involved in, which is sort of interactive, real-time online storytelling, when they use protected characters or protected settings, is that different from written fan fiction? And has there been any case law in this kind of online area?
There's been no case law. I don't think it's different as a legal matter. That is, I think, for many of the same reasons, it should generally be regarded as fair use. One of the legal surprises of the digital age is that the definitions that we use of what counts as a reproduction of a copyrighted work are really easy to satisfy digitally. All something has to be is to be fixed, and courts have held that fixation happens really, really quickly. So if the words are on the screen long enough for you to perceive and interact with them, there may well have been fixation. Just as if you were reading a story that was fixed in the conventional, ordinary layperson sense, and that you could return to a number of times. So I think the law would probably see them as pretty much the same.
So that makes, for example, then this kind of online storytelling much more similar to written fan fiction than to, say, someone performing a play on their front yard.
Absolutely. It's the differences between sitting around and talking. If you were telling the story in a circle with your friends, it would not be fixed. There actually might still be an issue about creating a derivative work, but for one thing, nobody would notice and report you to George Lucas.
Right.
the digital context means not only is the copyright owner's formal right involved, because it's a reproduction, because it may be a public performance, but also it's easier for everyone to find you, and which is great for finding fellow fans, maybe not so great for sometimes getting a cease and desist letter.
Well, now, if the Mush and its players are in different countries,
mm-hmm.
Because I know although there are some common copyright conventions among countries, there are certainly different legal frameworks. Whose laws come into play?
You've asked one of the tougher questions of internet law. The probably the best answer is the law of whatever country the player is in applies to the player. So the player who has the story unfolding on the screen in front of him, that player is making a reproduction in his or her country. And so you would possibly have to look at it under the laws of many countries if the copyright owner chose to pursue it there.
I suppose then that there's also an issue with respect to the country where the server itself is hosted.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. There is, unfortunately, no international consensus on this. The EU has worked out some principles, and in general, the idea is that the server might not be the place to look because it might only be transmitting stuff to people elsewhere. So the country where the server is may not really have as much of an interest in it as the country where people are receiving the information. That's where, if there's an economic impact, there'll be an economic impact, or you know, if there is some other type of harm, that harm would be there.
That's very interesting. You know, sometimes people who want to run mushes that are set in a published world and don't want to sort of assert fair use rights to do so, they contact the author of the published world. And there are some authors who readily agree, and there are others who refuse. And when authors in the fantasy genre refuse, many of them cite a situation that occurred where a fan had an idea for a story that was set in one of Marion Zimmer Bradley's worlds and then threatened to sue her if she used that idea in a novel of her own. And she was, in fact, planning a novel, and in the end, she and her publisher canceled the novel. Now, this is a case that didn't go to court, but is this a legitimate concern for copyright holders?
Well, there's kind of two ways to look at this. It is a deeply felt concern of copyright owners. I don't actually think that fans are any more likely to do this than random strangers. There's a phrase in the entertainment industry that goes, where there's a hit, there's a writ, which is to say, if you have something popular, people are going to sue you for having stolen their ideas, even though it is extremely unlikely that you did. But people, whether or not they're part of an organized fandom, often think that somehow their great idea is completely unique. Nobody else could have come up with it. And therefore, if they see something like that, it must have been stolen somehow. And especially if they've submitted it to someone in the entertainment industry, it must have somehow made its way to the producers. So, for example, there's a pair of artists who are suing the producers of Heroes for having taken their idea of having an artist who can paint the future. They're claiming infringement and theft of ideas. And, in fact, this is not a particularly stunningly original idea. You can easily imagine two people having come up with it independently, and yet they're completely convinced. And they're not fans. You know, this was just an independent thing they had. So part of the answer is this can happen anytime. It's probably the case that fans are less likely to shout theft because they are, after all, fans. Nonetheless, you can't deny that plenty of copyright owners are terrified of this for whatever reason. So I do think that it's probably best practices to say something on the order of, by the way, if we ever see something like this in the published work, we aren't going to sue. So I don't think that in general disclaimers are all that useful, but it may be that that type of disclaimer is something that could reassure a copyright owner.
I have a question here that was phoned in from Vaidiv at Mush, so I'm going to play it out for you.
Okay.
In the software industry, there are licenses everywhere, and many of which allow random people to make derivative works under the license as long as they follow certain rules. My question is, why don't the TV studios do the same thing for fanfic? There seems to be a legal sentiment that I think you follow, that fanfic within certain bounds is legal. But why don't companies appear to create some... Why don't they create some license that exactly defines those boundaries and just say, accept this license and you're legal as long as you do what we say?
So this is something that lots of people have been asking, and I think there is some experimentation going on with this. For example, Lucasfilm, for the first time, has accepted the idea of some fan fiction and has expanded its fan video contest to include not just parodies and documentaries, but certain types of derivative works that are fan video mashup type things. So I do think we're going to see a lot more experimentation with that. My own feeling on this is I am nervous about the kind of restrictions that get put on it, because it turns out that the things that they don't want to see may be precisely the things that fans are interested in exploring. So, for example, the role of alternate sexualities. Can there be gay Jedi? We don't know, but it might be interesting to find out. And Lucasfilm is sort of maintaining the right to suppress any of that or anything that they end up finding uncomfortable. So, for example, suppose somebody made a fan film or wrote a fan story that had obvious connections to the war in Iraq. That might make them uncomfortable whichever way the story went. And they might not want to, they might want to control that. So I'm uncomfortable with practices of sort of limited licensing. Now, this idea of an open source type license where anybody can use it as long as they behave properly with respect to licensing is really attractive, and you know, maybe we'll see some people trying that out too, trying out some more complete creative freedom. I think that would be great. And as I said, I think that might be something that the fans can work through from the fan side, some set of best practices, including the idea that this is not ever about interfering with the copyright owner's rights.
Is there a danger that the widespread adoption of some sort of licensing setup like that could in fact threaten fair use?
Another really, really important question. So there are two ways to look at this. If the copyright owner is willing to license something, that affects the fourth factor of the fair use analysis. Once the copyright owner says, yes, for a fee of $1 a year, you can play in my online role-playing game, then suddenly competing ones start to look like they are interfering with the copyright owner's market. But to the extent that the copyright owner says, for example, you can have adventures, but you can't talk about sex, then it seems like the copyright owner is trying to control the message and maybe trying to control critical uses or critical explorations of the universe. And that might actually seem censorious and might even make a case for at least the fan stories that aren't allowed may seem more like fair use under those circumstances, because it's clear then that the copyright owner isn't trying to preserve a single artistic vision. They're willing to let anybody play the game, but as just they have to stay coloring within the lines. And that is not as legitimate a type of behavior as, for example, saying, well, I don't want anyone to play in my universe. In some ways, that seems more like censorship.
Yeah, that really does lead to a very kind of interesting situation for, you know, mush creators, for example, that to the degree to which they diverge from what the author would approve of, they are more protected, as it were.
That's right, and I don't think we know right now how this is going to play out, because this phenomenon of copyright owners experimenting with big general licenses to people to create mashups and so on, that's just very new, and we don't know the legal consequences. We surely do know that copyright owners will use this to assert that unauthorized fan creations are not fair use,
because they are willing to license some. But the legal doctrine is at least mixed on that. And courts have begun to say you can't get rid of fair use just by being willing to license. So, for example, suppose a publisher said, well, from now on I'm licensing book reviews. So pay me a dollar and you can do a book review, mm-hmm. And I'll even let you do a bad one. Well, it's still the case that a book review is fair use. And you know, you can't change that just by changing your behavior with respect to licensing, because the social purpose of the use is still so valuable. So we check back in a couple of years and see what's happened with this. It's definitely an exciting time to be a copyright lawyer and to be interested in this fan endeavors. Because everyone is still figuring out what's going on.
And is there anything else that we need to know?
I guess I should do the standard disclaimer. I'm a lawyer, but I'm not the lawyer of anyone listening to this. So this is not specific legal advice.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Well, it was a pleasure to do so.
That's it for episode 6 of Tiny Talk. Music for this episode of Tiny Talk comes from Project System 12 from the Digital Spaceland 1 album and Jamendo.com. If you're downloading this directly from the web, you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Tiny Talk is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license, so you're welcome to share it as is, just don't sell it. Show notes for Tiny Talk are at community.penmush.org. If you have comments, mushing questions you'd like answered, or suggestions for future shows, send email to tinytalk@javelin.penmush.org or leave a voicemail at 206-333-1542. Until next time, keep the text flowing.